Right, so everybody tells you to exercise, yes? To get fit. But what nobody tells you is that there's an unwanted, unpleasant side effect to all of this, because the more you exercise, the more likely it is somewhere down the track that you're going to hurt yourself. So what can you do to help prevent getting injuries? And what should you do about it if you have got one? This is part three of the Life Matters series, Exercise and Injuries.
How many of you, ladies and gentlemen, get up sprightly in the morning and do your daily dozen? Yes, it does sound rather like work, doesn't it? Still, if ever you should feel that way inclined, try this series of a dozen, devised by Mr. Herbert Naylor, Physical Training Director of the YMCA. We're on the second exercise
In this episode, core strength. You hear a lot about that these days, but how important is core strength as far as helping to prevent injuries when you're exercising? Also, what's the role and responsibility of fitness trainers in minimising your injuries? And to begin, when you do get some sort of musculoskeletal injury, what should you do? Vanessa Rice is an exercise physiologist.
What a lot of people will do is just stop exercising and wait for it to recover and not do any type of intervention to help the recovery. Having an injury, you do need to rehabilitate it. So we need to modify the exercises. And that also then can mean looking at our overall exercise program and making modifications to it as well.
For repair and rehab, the person you're most likely to see, or who a GP will recommend you see, is a physiotherapist or an osteopath. Both undertake some years of tertiary training, but what's the difference between the two? And when should you see one or the other?
Okay, so I'm a physio. I don't train through an osteopathic training system, but we do work with osteopaths, and a lot of the osteopaths do have a similar treating method to us, using manual therapy and exercise rehab.
What's the most difficult injury or part of the body for you to treat, Tam?
Personally, I find the shoulder is one of the most challenging.
Oh, that's where my problem is.
Oh, what a surprise. At least we're getting somewhere with that one. So I find it difficult with the shoulders because it's a very complex joint. When it moves, it's like an orchestra. There's different muscles, you know, stringing together, allowing it to move up and down. It only takes one little string or one muscle to be torn to cause that orchestra to break apart. So if you're in a musical setting, the violinist's string breaks, that doesn't sound too nice. Same thing with the shoulder too. So if there's a muscle strain right there, the other muscles will have to work harder. And so you lose that beautiful movement. And through physiotherapy, we try to address that movement by improving the motor control, addressing the muscle, fixing that string, fixing that muscle, and using hands-on treatment and exercise rehabilitation. So I guess in terms of who should you see, whether an osteopath or physiotherapist, it depends on the individual. But the main thing we always say is as long as you always have a good rapport with the clinician and also getting some good results from them.
It is hard to know who to go and see to start with. We say that there are a lot of similarities and a few differences. So you might see a physiotherapist and an osteopath for a very similar condition. Some of the differences are in some of the tools and tricks of the stuff that we do in the rooms is quite different.
But like physiotherapy, osteopathy is hands-on?
Yes, absolutely. Yep, very hands-on. So one of the techniques that we learn as osteopaths is joint manipulation, which is just about giving a cavitation to a joint to help release the pressure and help with ease of move.
Is that what the layperson calls getting cracked?
Yes, often people come in and say, can you crack my back? It's a lot of people think that it's being put in or out. You know, people come in and say, my back's out. And we often have to explain that if a joint was out, you'd probably be in hospital because that would mean it's dislocated. So it's about education over a technique used in the right setting.
Osteopath Michelle Funder and physiotherapist Tam Pham.
Have we done this when I throw you a ball?
Yes.
We have, yeah. Okay. So Alan's balance is not red hot. We need to switch it on. So a lot of training is monkeying around with the individual you've got, because people are so complex with what they're good at, what they're not good at, let alone injuries that might compound the situation. Take your time, no hurry. I want you to stay on the thing, but I want you to throw me the ball as well.
When it comes to exercise-related injuries, the role of health professionals like physios and osteos is trying to fix you up after you've done something that hurts. But what role and responsibility do fitness instructors have in minimising your injuries in the first place? Jared Boyle is a former heavyweight kickboxer, now a personal trainer.
It's a very serious business. If you take responsibility for someone, you have benign control over them and what they're doing, and that gives them a sense of confidence. But if you injure them, it's then your fault.
So as a personal trainer, what sort of study have you done? What knowledge do you have of, you know, apart from your own background in sport and exercise, what knowledge do you have, say, of anatomy or physiology or biomechanics?
To be quite honest, it's limited. I did anatomy and physiology as a component of my qualification to work as a trainer, but I'm very careful not to overstep the mark where those things are concerned. And I mean, through hurting myself, I've come to know plenty of good physios and osteos and people like that, and it actually engenders a significant degree of confidence in your clients. If they can tell you about a problem, and rather than having a guess, you say, see this person, I've seen them, I got a good result. Again, it's the boundaries of your own responsibility. I always say, if it hurts you, stop. If you feel uncomfortable, stop. For example, you know, if someone loses their balance and they fall and hurt themselves, I personally, whether I would say it or not, I would feel responsible for that. You know, I need to take responsibility in order to get control because I know where they're going a lot better than they do.
What about, though, pushing someone a little bit further? I mean, if I'm not used to exercise, then I might pull back a bit, you know. Do you push
a bit? But that's okay. That's okay for you to pull back because, you know, we gain confidence through positive experience. Like, I'm not just seeing you on the one occasion. So I will push you when you trust me, and that trust exists within the parameters of your capacity.
And keeping me safe.
Absolutely. I mean, because the thing about it is, you come to a trainer to get fit. You do not come to get injured.
Here's an exercise that suggests rocking chairs. After all, a rock on the tummy is worth two on the head, and it's good for slimming as well.
These days, everyone from fitness instructors to health practitioners to your next-door neighbour talks about core strength. Is core strength really as important as everyone says it is? And what role does it play in helping to prevent injuries? Andrew Jowett is a sport and exercise physician.
It's important to, in any medical discussion, I guess, to start from a definition. And so what are we talking about when we're talking about core strength? And I guess if you ask a number of athletes or trainers or coaches or even health professionals, you'll have different ideas. The core is much more than just your abdomen, and it's really the muscles excluding the arms and the legs. So it incorporates in every movement of the human body. As an example, I talk about the kinetic chain of movement. There's a classic story of a baseball pitcher who injured his toe and then in the next pitch injured his shoulder. And so think about the connection of a throw. So the power comes through the foot, up through the leg, into the hip, across the body, across the chest, into his arm and into the ball, and the ball goes 96 miles an hour across the plate. It's that whole.
So you're saying the toe bone's connected to the shoulder bone or something?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Ultimately, it's got lots of bones in between, but that's right. It's a whole chain of movement, and the core's the central part of that. And so I think you do need to consider that central component of force transfer across the body. So having a core that is strong and capable is important. But there's also an argument that we've gone a bit too far on core strength. And it's really an interpretation of what we mean by core strength. And there's actually some research from some of the back pain researchers at Curtin University who talk about excessive abdominal bracing. And in fact, a lot of our patients with chronic back pain are overactive through their core muscles. And we have to teach them to switch it off. So it's almost felt that perhaps that contributes to the pain. That's what the static or isometric, trying to hold a constant tightness. But I think now we understand that the core is a much more dynamic, moving sort of feast in terms of how it activates. and we're hopefully getting away from that bracing. You can imagine also in that bracing situation, that stiffens the whole body and maybe reduces the dissipation of forces, reduces the shock absorption as well. So it's a balance.
Chronic low back pain is in particular very difficult to manage, but the science behind it has changed considerably. So in the past, there used to be a lot of emphasis on core strengthening exercises, so saying that you need to have a strong core to reduce your back pain. But there's also new evidence that suggests that psychological management, such as talking to the patient, educating them, has helped too. But also there are other things such as general exercises to help. So it's very complex. So as a clinician, we always say treat the patient, not the actual science itself. So using the evidence, but considering the patient himself to actually assist them to get better. But also asking the patient what makes them feel better, because that's also important. That's part of physiotherapy, listening to the patient and evidence-based practice.
There's this huge push for research and evidence-based medicine, which I think is absolutely terrific. But you'll read a research article and they'll be saying, this is the best way to do it. And you know you've done it a different way for years and have helped people through those injuries. And you're thinking, am I going to stop doing that? I'm not sure. So there certainly is a mystery about the body. And I think that's because there's so many different elements that affect us as humans. It's not just our musculoskeletal health, but our psychology and, you know, all sorts of stuff that add to that whole sort of holistic approach to the person.
For injury rehab and prevention, osteopath Michelle Funder also uses Pilates.
I went into clinical Pilates because I was treating as an osteopath and I felt that the hands-on treatment could only offer my patients so much help, and that it really was through that movement and strengthening and stabilising people that they could get those long-term changes and really, you know, have a huge influence on their risk of re-injuring their bodies or helping them to rehabilitate.
So what does Pilates do?
So we teach clinical Pilates. It's tailored to the individual. We assess the person, see where their asymmetries are in their function and their muscle strengths and weaknesses. Then Pilates basically focuses on getting the deep stabilizing muscles that surround and protect the joints to activate and use them rather than the big global muscles that tend to get tired and tight. And then what can often happen is when that is becoming tight and tired, the joints become affected. So we're trying to build the muscles that surround and protect the joints.
You know, exercising takes time and costs money, and then you get injured and that takes time and costs money. Sometimes I wonder if we shouldn't just stand still.
That's a good one, Amanda. I guess standing still, you also get injured. You just come from standing there, you get sore back and pain. But we know there are many benefits of exercise, and we shouldn't just think about it as, you know, costing money, but you're investing in your health. So we know exercise improves your cardiovascular, your bone, your muscle health, you know, mental health. It has an abundance of benefits. Standing still, I think I'll get bored, Amanda. What do you think?
Physiotherapist Tam Pham.
Rhythmic exercise is good for you. It's interesting, it's easy to do, and it's fun. Try it. You'll like it.
In the next episode in this series about exercise and injuries, learning to manage whatever damage you've done to yourself, also being active when you have maybe not an injury but a chronic condition, and coming to fitness late if you've never really been a very physical or sporty person.
And yes, learning to manage an old injury or chronic condition, and what to be aware of if you're taking up a new form of exercise or if you've never really done much of it before. That's part 4 of Exercise and Injuries, coming up next week here on Life Matters.